Today, I want to talk about OC church leaders. That's the title of this talk, and that's not Orange County church leaders for those of us here, but OC church leaders. And this talk kind of came to my mind in reading a book called Broken Windows, Broken Business. And I read this over the little holiday that we just had, and the subtitle is How the Smallest Remedies Reap the Biggest Rewards. And I think it was a decent book. It's not a great book, it's a very motivational book. Not necessarily a very technical book on how to do this, but it kind of motivated me on some things. It's based on the theory that Giuliani had when he started cleaning up crime in New York City. They knew they couldn't fix everything, so they decided to fix some of the smaller things, like the broken windows. They decided to fix the graffiti on the subway, the turnstile jumpers. And in fixing these smaller things, it created a culture where the bigger things kind of took care of themselves. And so this guy in the book, Michael Levine, he says that you have to watch the broken windows in your business. That the broken windows are a sign that things are going bad overall. An example of broken windows would be like a restroom that's not clean. And he talks about how one time McDonald's was known as a place where clean restrooms were in abundance, and now they're not. And so the business is declining, and people can no longer trust that the restrooms are clean, or the counters are not going to be clean, or the service is not going to be the quality that it was. And he talks about watching that, but there was one passage that he has that I put in your notes that really struck me, and it's kind of the basis of this talk. So here's what he says. This is from Michael Levine, Broken Windows, Broken Business. He says, some people suffer from a condition known as OCD, Obsessive Compulsive Disorder. Maybe some of you suffer from that. I'm not sure. You're the ones out here early rearranging the chairs and setting it all up. But here's what he writes. Its symptoms may include an incredibly focused interest in one topic, or the inability to function without certain rituals like frequently washing hands or locking doors over and over. These people often seek treatment and can sometimes lead what is considered normal life through therapy, medication, or other avenues. And he goes on to say this, and this is what stayed with me. While in personal life, OCD is a challenge, in business, obsession and compulsion are good things. In fact, they are necessary. Without an obsessive attention to detail and a compulsive drive to fix broken windows in a business, disaster is being courted. In today's business climate, everyone should have OCD concerning broken windows. And no window is too small to break, nor is any break too small to repair. Everything counts, significantly more than you might think. And that's really got me thinking about broken windows at the church. Like, are there things that we sort of let our guard down on that to the world say, hey, maybe things aren't as great as they appear? Are there windows that we need to watch? And I want us to talk about that just a little bit. But I was thinking about this idea of OCD. I don't know if any of you have friends or family who may have been diagnosed with OCD, but it's pretty popular these days in entertainment. And one that I think I first encountered was As Good As It Gets. You remember that movie with Jack Nicholson and Helen Hunt? Jack Nicholson played a character named Melvin Udall who had a terrible OCD complex. He couldn't walk on cracks, you may remember. He had to do things in a certain way. The way he liked his doors, he kept all the soap in his bathroom, and he had to use a new piece of soap every time that he did it at a new bar. And we have this conversation in one of the kind of climactic scenes with Helen Hunt, who he's been courting throughout the movie. And this is what Melvin says. He says, I've got a really great compliment for you, and it's true. And then Carol, who's a little skeptical, says, I'm so afraid you're about to say something awful. Melvin, don't be pessimistic. It's not your style. Okay, here I go. Clearly, a mistake. I got this. What ailment? My doctor, a shrink that I used to go to all the time, he says that in 50 or 60% of the cases, a pill really helps. I hate pills. Very dangerous things, pills. Hate. I'm using the word hate here about pills. Hate. My compliment is that night when you came over and told me that you would never, well, you were there, you know what you said. Well, my compliment to you is the next morning I started taking the pills. Carol, I don't quite get how that's a compliment for me. Melvin, you make me want to be a better man. Carol, that's maybe the best compliment of my life. Melvin, well, maybe I overshot a little because I was aiming at just enough to keep you from walking out. But that's the setup, you know. She made him want to be better. And that's a pretty powerful scene when it happens in that. And he had this compulsive disorder, but she made him want to take the pill. She made him want to do the best that he could and be the best person that we can. And, you know, she came into his life and kind of helped fix some of these broken windows that he had. Recently, there was a best-selling book by Michael Balducci called The Camel Club. And the protagonist in this thriller was a person with OCD. You're probably familiar with the television show Monk. Have you seen that on USA? This highly intelligent detective who has OCD after the loss of his wife. And in all of these cases, what's interesting, I think, is that in all the cases that are portrayed in the media, the person with OCD is also highly intelligent. And, you know, they're on to something. They have something they're trying to get at or trying to fix. And so here's the big idea for this little talk. For us to be successful church leaders, we have to be obsessive and compulsive about the quality of our work and the quality of our church. And, you know, what does that look like for us to be obsessive, compulsive church leaders? To not let any window get broken, or to not let any window get broken and not get quickly repaired. And so here's kind of what I wrote in your notes. In a person's life, OCD is a sign of potential disease. In a church's life, OCD is a sign of potential health. In a person's life, OCD focuses on the mundane, like, you know, stepping on cracks or whatever. But in a church's life, OCD focuses on the eternal. Would you agree that somebody may decide not to go to church based on the quality of the church? I mean, if you know you can't find a parking space in those churches that have parking problems, if the signage is in disrepair, if these things could all be turnoffs for people in coming to church. And we probably know this intuitively, but I don't know if we've necessarily fleshed this out. But you know, one of our big values at The Journey has always been, people have enough reasons not to attend church. Let's not give them another one. You know, they're coming up with all these excuses not to attend. So let's try to remove every barrier that we can. And so I want to challenge us to be obsessive, compulsive, disorderly church leaders when it comes to fixing this. So I have just a few thoughts on that. Then I want to hear some interaction from you guys. So I want to challenge you to have an obsessive attention to detail. An obsessive attention to detail. Because really, that's what this is all about taking care of the details, of somehow believing that every detail is noticed, every detail matters, everything that we can put into its proper place counts, that no window will remain unbroken, as Levine talks about. I think the key to having a healthy obsession to detail is to view the church through the eyes of the attenders. And I think that's really hard to do when you've been on our side for a while. I mean, what is it like in our situation for somebody to go from the street to the seat, to use the phrase that some of you were talking about in a team the other day? I mean, what do they feel when they walk in off the street into our church? What are the first things that come into their eyes? You may remember that we added that video on the television downstairs. I mean, what does that say to someone? Because they're standing there in our situation waiting on an elevator in the place where we currently meet. You know, they have to take this elevator up there. What else are they seeing? You know, what impression are they making? Studies have found that a person makes up their mind about a church within the first 7 minutes of when they attend. And fortunately, that means you can't blame it on me or anybody else on the teaching team, because they've decided long before we ever get up to speak, you know, what kind of church this is going to be. But what are they really seeing? You know, and I walked in yesterday and we had a sign that was probably a 2 or 3 year old sign that when we got it 2 or 3 years ago, we really thought it was high class. I mean, we thought this sign was like quality type sign. But over time, we've so raised the quality level of the church that now 2 years later, that sign looked pretty out of place. And we were talking in another meeting today about, you know, we need to upgrade that sign or just not use it. Because way back when it was really quality, but now we've raised the quality level so much that this sign that once was very good now just doesn't serve us anymore. And so seeing things from the eyes of the attenders. I remember the first day that you guys decided to spruce up the bathrooms. And Sarah, you remember that? We got this idea actually from a church plant that we work with. And we decided to put, you know, perfumes and lotions and bars of nice smelling stuff that I don't even know what you call it into the restroom. Carrick and I recently discovered that there's now candy in the guys' bathroom. So, you know, we're over there all the time hanging out, getting breath mints. But, you know, what does that say? In the assimilation seminar, which hopefully you've listened to or heard me teach, I have this thing in there where I say everything about your church is talking. And I'm not just talking about the people. I mean, obviously, greeters are very important. And, you know, people who are there to usher is very important. But everything's talking. You know, the signage out front is speaking. And it's either saying, come in, or go away, or we weren't expecting you, or you're not welcome here, or whatever. But, you know, everything is speaking. And so if everything is speaking, then what is our church saying? You know, what are we saying to the people who come in? In the book that we're reading right now as a staff, How to Win Customers and Keep Them for Life, which if you haven't had a chance to get into it yet, I think it's a great book. I read it over the holiday and just loved it. He tells a story early on in the section I was to report on today. On page 8 and 9 about TGI Fridays, they began to track that certain restaurants were in a sales slump. So they went in and they began to look at why this sales slump happened. And basically the issue was customer service had fallen down. And this is what he talks about on page 8 and 9 in your notes. The malady was cured by looking within each individual restaurant for specific problems and trying to view the business through the eyes of the customers. Just underline that, through the customer's eyes. Yeah, that's so hard to do, I think, for us. Is the place clean and presentable? Are the employees helpful and friendly? To ensure that the customer's viewpoint is understood, every manager must periodically sit at every table in his or her restaurant. Isn't that an interesting idea? Today, TGI Fridays has an extensive list of potential problem areas to check in a restaurant whenever sales slump. And so they can actually trace this back, and they've developed, I guess, this whole list of things, you know, the restroom's clean, or the table's clean, or the wait staff friendly, all that kind of deal. And they turn that around. And I just thought that's a powerful story, maybe something that we should have, an obsessive attention to detail. Harvey McKay, in the book that the executive staff just finished reading, he said, little things don't mean a lot, they mean everything. And that's this obsessive attention to detail. And I think the issue here is that of being excellent in all that you do. And I borrow this definition of excellence from our worship arts team, where excellence is doing the best you can with what you have. In our situation, we can't do a whole lot about the sidewalk out in front of the subway. But, you know, that just is what it is. But we can do a lot about when you step into our venue, you know, when you come into our place that we rent on a Sunday. We can control that. And because we're in rented facilities, maybe nobody expects that, you know, the crack on the back of the toilet is going to be fixed or whatever. But they expect that it can at least be odor-free and clean, you know, or if the floor is old, they know that, but they can expect us to keep it clean and, you know, keep the trash picked up or whatever. That's mainly focused on the service. There are so many other areas in the church where we need an obsessive attention to detail. And so I thought it might be interesting to hear from you guys. What are some areas where we need to be obsessive? Maybe what are some areas that we are obsessive? Because there's certainly a few things that we've decided that we're going to be obsessive about as a church. So what do you have? What are some areas that I've mentioned or that you want to add to, or maybe just some that we haven't talked about where we need to be obsessive?
I think we're becoming obsessive with the lobby.
Yeah, the lobby area. You're down there every Sunday, so you know that we're trying to become obsessive with that. And trying to think, you know, as people are waiting for the elevator, what are they asking? What are their fears? How do we greet them? How do we say goodbye to them? I saw you down there doing that, you know, saying see you later, see you next week as people are leaving in the lobby area.
Following up with emails and following up with people when they visit for the first time.
Yeah, we've been pretty obsessive about that. We have this 96-hour rule when it comes to follow-up that, you know, from the time you visit, within the next 96 hours, you're going to get a follow-up email from us. Actually, I think that's a 36-hour rule, and then we have a 96-hour rule where they're going to get a letter. And so we've tried to be obsessive about that, and we're even trying to get more obsessive about that in this coming year. What are some other areas?
People are obsessive about feedback, especially when it comes to the Sunday service. You know, after every service, we're backstage. Oh, we need to change this. This has to happen for this next service. But that kind of obsession drives the services being better, and then every other area of our church continue to do better as well.
Yeah, obsessive about feedback. You know, some people are afraid of that. And I mean, it is a little intimidating after the first service to meet backstage with everybody who was there and have them critique, you know, what you said with your message or with the transitions that happened in the music or what was going on with the sound or with the tech. But, you know, that's an obsession. Ken Blanchard says that feedback is the breakfast of champions. And so, you know, wanting to make it better, wanting to hear from people is certainly an obsession. What else?
Timeliness, being on time.
Yeah, you hit one. Being on time. I don't know if you guys have noticed, that's kind of an obsession with us around here, that we're going to be on time. And we may not end on time, but doggone, we're going to start on time. You know, the workday starts at 8:30 and we're here. And when we have call time for setup on Sunday, we're there on time. And, you know, we try to keep to that and that obsession with time. And of course, we live in a city that's obsessed with time and the most valuable commodity our people have. So that's a good one. Any others you can think of? Maybe areas we should be obsessed about.
And I definitely think the Sunday preparation.
It's the Sunday service stupid kind of thing.
That's right. I think, you know, I've been in other ministries, and it's just when I first came, I remember just thinking, this is amazing. We have every minute accounted for and stuff like that. And I thought, you know, what's the purpose then? And again, the purpose is that end result that you're talking about, because it affects so many people that come to the doors. It's important for us to prepare and get that ready. So.
I mean, we do have that little saying of it's the Sunday service stupid. It's not the only thing we do. Second to that is groups. And so we try to put the vast majority of our energy into the Sunday service and into groups. And we try to be pretty obsessive about that. And then obsessive about planning, you know, because we believe that planning honors God, that God is a God who plans. God is a God of strategy. And, you know, we do that not just because, you know, we've got to have the new bar of soap like our buddy back in As Good As It Gets, but because we believe that it has eternal consequences, that we've got this limited amount of time with people on Sunday. And so we've got to be obsessive about how we use that so we can maximize it for God's glory. That's what that's about. That's good. What else can you think of?
We probably should be obsessive about meeting new people on Sunday and constantly just being really, really friendly to those who are with us for the first time.
Yeah, you know, being obsessive about meeting new people and, you know, going out of our way. That was easier to do when we were small. You know, we just had a few people around. We knew who the new people were. I mean, you just eye them up. Well, you're new. But now that we've gotten larger and we've got multiple services and we all have, you know, multiple roles on Sunday, it's really easy to let that slide and not have an obsessive attention to people on that. That's good. Think of other things?
I think kind of going along with the Sunday service, just the whole setup of it, that it's easy for people to get in and just that we have the food there available for them. I think it's something we're definitely obsessive about but can continue to be.
Yeah, obsessive about food is a really good thing, you know. Because I can imagine we'd have a revolt on our hands if people showed up one day and we didn't have the Krispy Kremes, you know. Or the, you know, that whole idea, just to wrap up this section, of thinking it through the eyes of the attenders. You know, I mean, what does it feel like to walk into our place? What does it feel like to get that first-timer email on Sunday? What does it feel like that you request the free book on the website and you actually get it, you know? What does it feel like to actually meet someone, you know, and they're nice? In this city especially, you know, but this is that obsessive attention to detail that I'm talking about. And then to move to the next section there, an obsessive attention to detail, number one, but then a compulsive drive to fix it now if it's broken. A compulsive drive to fix it now. You know, and that is when you spot something that just doesn't seem quite right. You know, maybe it's just a little crack in the window. Maybe it's just something that's beginning to form. Maybe it's just, you know, like that commercial right now for Monk where he's trying to line up the candles so that they all fit, you know, from smallest to largest. Maybe if it just doesn't quite fit, it just becomes a compulsion that you've got to fix it. I mean, this has to be repaired. This just is not acceptable, you know, that we've got to fix it now. And I actually think this is one of the things that separates average churches from extraordinary churches. Average churches, I noticed, have this idea that, you know, well, we'll talk about that in the meeting next week. Or, you know, the next time we get together and evaluate, we'll sort of fix this. But extraordinary churches are like, we can't let another minute go by. I mean, if the bathrooms are not cleaned, I've personally got to go get the broom and the mop and go fix it. You know, if things on the table aren't laid out just right, I mean, I've got to stop and take just a moment and fix this. You know, if somebody over there didn't get spoken to, I've got to go out of my way to find that person after the service and speak to them. You know, it's just this compulsive drive to fix what it just isn't right. And again, it's not because it's mundane, but because these are eternal things that we talk about. I've had this little saying in coaching networks lately that a week is long enough for a problem to go unfixed. I put in your notes, how quickly can this problem be fixed? Well, 80% of problems can be fixed immediately. And certainly on our staff, where we've got this whatever it takes problem. I mean, even yesterday, you know, when we had an unusual day with, we had everybody around tables, you know, there were some things at the last minute that we realized needed to be fixed. And one of those was a PowerPoint thing that we were doing. Another one was about a traffic flow issue with how the offering was going to be received. And, you know, we just fixed it. I mean, right there, you know, John, Sarah, and I standing off stage just a few minutes before the service was to start. You know, we fixed it. And I found that 80% of the problems, you know, can be fixed immediately if somebody just takes the initiative. But it's easy just to kind of put your blinders on. And then it says 99% of the problems can be fixed in 1 week or less. I mean, how long does it take to fix a bad sign out in front of your venue? You know, about a week. How long does it take to change the setup of a room or to change the friendliness of a culture? I think you can do it in about a week if you put some time into it. And there's a few problems that maybe can't. But this is your mantra. You know, fix it now. You know, you've heard of do it now, you know, but this is fix it now. We're going to fix this. Tom Peters, in his classic study on leadership and management, he says, good managers have a bias for action. And that's certainly one of our core values, that we're going to take action. We're going to get this done. We're going to take the initiative and fix it now. Indira Gandhi, who was the Prime Minister of India until I think around 1984, she said, have a bias toward action. Let's see something happen now. You can break that big plan into small steps and take the first step right away. You know, so even if you can't fix it all the way, you can start fixing it part of the way. And so here's kind of a little action step I put in your notes. And this ties in with another one of our values, which is, you know, no one's done till everyone's done. And so, you know, just because you fixed your area, if there's another area that needs to be fixed, you jump in as a staff person and fix that other area. So I kind of put this action step, and it is, if you see a problem, see that the problem is fixed, you know, whether it's in your area or not. And, you know, if you see that, say, I'm going to follow up on this. I'm going to go put my energy, my time into this. Any thoughts on those 2 points, an obsessive attention to detail, a compulsive drive to fix it now? I think that's healthy, OC. And here's the D, a disorder that separates us from the norm. A disorder that separates us from the norm. And my point here on this is pretty quick, but in the medical field, a disorder is something that's abnormal. You know, the majority of the population doesn't have OCD. That's why it's not called OC natural. You know, it's not just commonplace. It's OCD. It's the disorder. And the disorder separates you from the norm. And I don't know if you've noticed or not, but we don't really need any more normal churches. I mean, normal churches aren't very welcoming. Normal churches don't think through the Sunday service. Normal churches don't think through how to reach people or how to improve what they're doing. It's just the same old thing. The first church I served in, I went out to do door-to-door witnessing. That's what we did in this particular church. You went out and you knocked on doors and you tried to get into somebody's house and you tried to share Christ with them. And it wasn't effective then. It's not effective now. But that's what we did. And I remember going to this one guy's house who I was told was a tough case, you know, and I have the gift of evangelism and, you know, I wanted to go after the tough cases and all that. And, you know, I sat there and talked to him. It was an extremely enlightening conversation. But I remember one of the things that he said to me is, Nelson, I went to that church 20 years ago. And I walked in there at 20 minutes after 11. Our service time was 11 o'clock because that's the way Baptists did it. You know, we had 11 o'clock service. And he said, I walked into that church at 20 minutes after 11. And I bet if I went this Sunday and walked in at 20 minutes after 11, I couldn't tell the difference between today and 20 years ago. And I remember thinking, yeah, you could, because the carpet looks much worse. The paint looks much worse. We, you know, haven't kept the parking lot up very well. But, you know, his point was well made. That, you know, it was a bad experience then, it's a bad experience now. And, you know, he took that as normal, as part of that. And that's always kind of stuck with me about, you know, if somebody comes to our church a year from now, will they feel like, hey, it's gotten better? You know, the atmosphere has improved. We're separated from the norm. John Maxwell in the CD that we all just listened to, he says, nobody pays for average. And, you know, nobody's attracted to average either. So this disorder, this compulsive drive to fix things, this obsessive attention to detail, I hope will set us apart from the norm. So why do we do this? Well, I've mentioned this throughout. Excellence honors God. I believe that there's a glory to God that can be offered in fixing these details that, you know, whether it does attract more people or it doesn't or whatever, at the very minimum, you know, God sees that we're doing this for His honor, that He's a God who deserves our best, and that excellence honors Him. And then we're also, on the flip side, we're doing it because people matter. And if some detail that's left undone, you know, would keep someone from our church or keep someone from having a relationship with God, then that detail can no longer go undone. We have to fix it. We have to fix it now. And so people matter to God. And then I'll just wrap up with our buddy Steve Sjogren's quote. We sort of give this quote a lot when it comes to servant evangelism. But I want to apply it today to this obsessive-compulsive disorder that I'm hoping to create among our staff, which is small actions done with great kindness can change the world. So let me pray for us. Father, help us to have your eyes and help us to see things through your perspective. Then, God, help us to take the initiative to not be so busy that we get so wrapped up in systems or having to do things in a certain way that we can't make a change in a way that's going to benefit your honor and in a way that's going to help someone draw closer to you. And so, God, as we talk about and as we look at our church this coming week, this week is long enough, so help us to fix what we need to fix for your glory and for the people that matter to you so much in this city. We pray this in Jesus' name. Amen. On behalf of ChurchLeaderInsights.com, thanks for listening today. Be sure and visit this website frequently for future recordings like this and other ways to train your staff and to help us all become better church leaders. In the meantime, if you found this helpful, please let others know about this website and feel free to subscribe to this audio podcast via iTunes. For more information on that, you can find that on our website at churchleaderinsights.com. Thanks again. Hi, this is Nelson Searcy with churchleaderinsights.com. You're about to hear a recording of a staff meeting where I'm talking to the Journey staff in New York City about being obsessive compulsive when it comes to the details inside of our church. So now let's go to the staff meeting where I'm talking about OC church leaders.